It was a time of pride for the gay community.
I felt like I was part of a movement to liberate ourselves.
Then came a mysterious and devastating disease.
The latest figures from Los Angeles County.
We were describing evidence of a new acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
This is a story of strength and resilience.
This is our deciding moment. Together, we are greater than AIDS.
Commitment to life. Sunday, April 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC and streaming now on Peacock.
Tonight on All In.
Knock, knock. Who's there? The FBI, that's who's there.
New details on Donald Trump's visit from the FBI.
They also said that they were looking for classified documents, evidence of a crime as far as classified documents go.
Tonight, what we're learning about what the FBI was looking for, the investigators who performed the search, and late reporting that a Republican member of Congress had his phone seized by the FBI. Then, Congressman Eric Swalwell on whether justice is closing in on Donald Trump. Plus, unpacking the Republican response one day later.
I'm angry. I feel violated.
President Trump is right when he compared this to Watergate.
The real target of this investigation isn't Trump. The real target of this investigation is you.
And alarming new reporting from NBC News on right-wing threats of violence in defense of Donald Trump when All In starts right now. Good evening from New York. I'm Alicia Menendez, in for Chris Hayes. 24 hours after the unprecedented FBI search of Donald Trump's Florida home, one of his coup-plotting allies in Congress, Republican Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, says he was stopped by three federal agents while traveling with his family. According to Perry, the agents presented a search warrant to confiscate his cell phone, which they then did. In a statement, the congressman said, quote, "My phone contains info about my legislative and political activities and personal/private discussions with my wife, family, constituents, and friends. None of this is the government's business." Perry is the head of the far-right House Freedom Caucus, and he has been a major proponent of Trump's big lie. Following the 2020 election, Perry tried to sell the White House on a number of baseless conspiracy theories, including that China hacked voting machines, that the British government collaborated with the CIA to rig the election, and that Italian satellites had manipulated the vote tallies. He also worked with the White House to plan strategies to throw out the results in states Trump lost. Congressman Perry was a key player in the failed scheme to appoint a Department of Justice official named Jeffrey Clark as acting attorney general, so Clark could weaponize the department to help spread Trump's false claims of fraud. In fact, Perry introduced Trump to Clark. It's not every day that a sitting congressman's cell phone is seized by the feds, especially one day after, as Trump put it, the FBI raided his home, although a more accurate term might be, quote, lawfully executed a search warrant. We are learning that federal agents in plain clothes gave advance notice to the Secret Service, President Mar-a-Lago, and provided them with a copy of the warrant before spending most of yesterday searching Trump's offices on the premises, including, as the ex-president told us, breaking into his safe. We now know that the search warrant was related to the federal investigation into missing classified documents that Trump took from the White House. The National Archives, well, they want them back. At the beginning of this year, the Washington Post reported that representatives from the archives retrieved 15 boxes of documents Trump improperly took. But that was apparently not everything, because according to a new report from the Washington Post, DOJ officials, including a counterterrorism head named Jay Bratt, went down to Mar-a-Lago in June to inquire about more documents. Quote, "Trump stopped by the meeting as it began to greet the investigators, but was not interviewed. The lawyers showed the federal officials the boxes, and Bratt and the others spent some time looking through the material." A lawyer for Trump said the Justice Department officials commented that they did not believe the storage unit was properly secured, so Trump officials added a lock to the facility. When FBI agents searched the property Monday, they broke through the lock that had been added to the door. According to Trump's lawyer, the FBI removed about a dozen boxes that had been stored in the basement storage area. While the search warrant left by agents was not shared, Trump's lawyer said that it, quote, indicated agents were investigating possible violations of laws dealing with the handling of classified material and the Presidential Records Act. Worth noting just how remarkable it is that there was a warrant at all. In order to obtain a federal search warrant, investigators need to successfully argue that there is probable cause a crime was committed and that evidence of the crime can be found in the location they want to search. It requires the sign-off from two branches of government, the executive branch by way of the DOJ and FBI, and the judicial branch, with a judge needing to approve the warrant. And with a case this unprecedented, it likely involved top-level officials at the DOJ, including, potentially, the attorney general himself. Christina Bob, that Trump lawyer who spoke to the Washington Post, confirmed the FBI did seize documents from Mar-a-Lago, even as she now tries to argue that the FBI is simply lying about the alleged crime and potentially fabricating evidence.
I don't think that there was actually anything there that's worthwhile. We'll see what they come up with. You know, if they did, it'll be interesting, especially since they precluded me from actually watching what they did. But at this point, I don't necessarily think that they would even go to the extent of trying to plant information. I think they just make stuff up and, you know, come up with whatever they want. And that's the way that they will have to proceed in order to actually try to indict the president, because they don't have anything. There's just nothing there.
Neither Trump nor his attorneys provided any evidence to support that outlandish claim. And there's absolutely no reason to believe it is more than just spin. But given what we are learning, it appears that the troubles do not end there for the twice impeached ex-president. Ashley Parker is the White House bureau chief for The Washington Post. She has been covering the investigation into these missing documents since its inception, and she joins me now. Ashley, your colleagues have reported that the FBI took about a dozen boxes from Mar-a-Lago yesterday. What more do we know?
Well, there's a ton we don't know, and I think it's important to start there. But we at The Washington Post have been covering this for months, really. So we know now that there have been over two dozen boxes taken from Mar-a-Lago. There were the initial 15 we reported on when the National Archives, after former President Trump left office, was sort of going through their normal process and realized, wait a minute, we don't have everything we think we should have. And they started reaching out to Trump and his team, and they retrieved 15 boxes. And it's also worth noting that some of the stuff that they got back then willingly was stuff that had been shredded and ripped and taped back together, which was a pension of Trump's. And that now, despite Trump and his team saying that they had sort of turned over everything, including during this visit in June, where they went down there, officials went down there again and said, wait a minute, we think there's some more stuff that you owe us. You go back to the government and to the National Archives, that today they found a dozen more boxes. So that does tell you there is a pretty yawning discrepancy between what Trump and his team handed over and felt they needed to hand over and what the FBI felt they still had that did not rightfully belong at Trump's private compound.
Back in February, Ashley, you reported on what Trump's advisors were saying about some of the documents in question. Quote, Trump advisors deny any nefarious intent and said the boxes contain mementos, gifts, letters from world leaders, and other correspondence. The items included correspondence with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, which Trump once described as love letters, as well as a letter left for Trump by President Barack Obama. I mean, Ashley, understanding that we don't know what we don't know, can we assume it was more than just mementos, gifts, sweet nothings from Kim Jong-un then?
We can act. Absolutely assume that because we know that. I think it's important to, the broad picture, say that the Trump team has often used sort of incompetence and chaos as a defense. This is what they claimed back when he was president. They said, you know, we couldn't have possibly colluded with the Russians. We were too stupid during the campaign to collude with the Russians. That was sort of what they were saying at this time early on, that it was a willy-nilly chaotic packing process. Trump and his team probably just threw some extra things in the boxes. They didn't really understand what they were taking. It was just these lighthearted, harmless mementos. But again, as we have reported previously, yes, there were all of those things. There was a model, for instance, of Air Force One. But there were also classified documents. Some of those classified documents were marked top secret. And some of those top secret documents were so sensitive and are so sensitive that they can't even be described publicly in the broadest of terms. So yes, are there some mementos? crimes, absolutely, but it's far more serious. And this is sort of what, as we started our reporting, really aroused the initial concern.
Right. When you're talking about classified top secret documents, you're also inherently talking about national security. I want to get you in on this other story today. Congressman Scott Perry, deeply involved with Trump's attempts to overturn the 2020 election, even separate from the context of yesterday's Mar-a-Lago search, the seizure of his cell phone would be a big deal. We would be talking about it tonight. How might Perry fit into this larger investigation?
Well, one thing that this underscores, actually, you mentioned this larger investigation, is just how many investigations there are going on right now of the former president and his allies. So that's something that they want to, you know, there's the January 6th committee investigation. There's investigations in Georgia. There's investigations in New York. And there's this particular investigation involving the National Archives. It seems like the Perry seizing of his cell phone likely has to do with January 6th. Because again, as you mentioned in that very comprehensive intro, the congressman was one of the first people who, the first person who introduced the former president to Jeffrey Clark, was deeply enmeshed in the plans to try to overturn the results of a free and fair election. And so, again, recognizing that we don't know what we don't know, and this is a rapidly developing and unfolding story, his cell phone records are much more likely, it seems, to be related to all of his involvement in January 6th in the efforts to overturn the election than some of the classified documents that the president took down to Mar-a-Lago.
Ashley Parker, as always, thank you. Glenn Kirshner is a former federal prosecutor who spent 30 years in the Washington, D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office. And Aja Rangappa is an attorney and former FBI special agent. They both join me now. Aja, I want to get you in on sort of the latest news here. We have learned that Republican Congressman Scott Perry had his cell phone seized by the FBI. Could these be tied to the FBI's search of Trump's home?
In my opinion, these are completely separate investigations. The classified documents would pertain to national security interests. And I think that the entire January 6th investigation is really separate and encompasses a large and wide-ranging conspiracy that they are investigating. Where Scott Perry fits into this, as Ashley mentioned, he was instrumental in introducing Trump to Jeffrey Clark. Jeffrey Clark, in turn, was, you know, instrumental in trying to get a letter sent to Georgia to get them to investigate fake allegations of voter fraud. And so I think what you see here is this investigation into Jeffrey Clark, which originated in the Office of the Inspector General at the Department of Justice, because he was an employee there, is slowly creeping like Burnham Wood towards members of Congress. And I think potentially towards Trump, because Scott Perry was also connected to Mark Meadows. Reportedly, Mark Meadows burned documents after meeting with Scott Perry. So this is, you know, I think the January 6th thing is very complex, involves a lot of different moving parts. I think the classified documents piece is much more discreet and straightforward and separate from the January 6th investigation.
Setting fire to documents, ripping them up, taping them back up. You really can't make it up, Glenn. I mean, is the burden of proof necessary to obtain a warrant to search Mar-a-Lago? Glenn, it's more than just like a hunch from investigators, right?
It is more than a hunch. It's a really rigorous process to obtain a federal search warrant. I know because I did it hundreds of times. So after the FBI conducts the investigation and collects up enough evidence where they believe they have probable cause to apply for a search warrant, that's not the end of the equation. What they do is they put all of that information about their investigation and the facts that lead them to conclude they have enough for a search warrant. They swear to it. It's a sworn affidavit under the penalties of perjury. And they bring it to a federal prosecutor who's working the case. I reviewed hundreds of these applications for search warrants. I have to go through it. I have to assess the evidence, meet with the agent, and then I have to sign off on it, putting my own reputation on the line. And I have to certify that I believe it has enough evidence to make out the probable cause standard. Then we shift over to a co-equal branch of government, the judiciary, and a judge makes his or her independent determination that, yes, there's enough evidence in the sworn affidavit to support the issuance of a search warrant. And when this is a search warrant involving the home, perhaps the summer or winter home of a former president, I can promise you that the leadership of the Department of Justice made sure that there was probable cause plus supporting this application for a search warrant.
You know, Ajay, it strikes me that there has been, for very good reason, a lot of talk about the possibility of criminal charges here. But you argue that this warrant is potentially instead about neutralizing a national security threat. Tell me why.
Yeah, I think things get more complicated when you have national security interests involved. You know, the Department of Justice has two different divisions. They have the National Security Division, they have the Criminal Division, and sometimes these divisions have different goals, and sometimes they are even working at cross purposes. What I think could be happening here, this is just one possibility, and I say this to manage expectations, is that the primary goal here was simply to retrieve these documents which present a grave national security threat. For example, if some of these documents included information about new defense technology, say, that the United States is developing, maybe Trump just thought they were cool and he just has them. He's not doing anything with them. But we know that, say, China, which has technology collection as one of its priorities, is trying to get access to them. It would be in the interest of the United States government to get those away, to get those secure in such a way that they won't be able to be accessed by adversaries who, you know, may intend harm to the United States. If that's the primary goal, then executing the search warrant is a way to obtain these documents, get them secure, and then the goal is met. The secondary interest would be to punish Trump. That would involve, you know, bringing charges, prosecuting them. And I defer to Glenn on this. I just think that that's a whole different ballgame. And it involves a completely different calculation on Merrick Garland's part on whether he wants to do that, especially given the number of things on DOJ's plate right now.
Glenn, I do want to bring you in on that, but I also want to bring in this element, which is the New York Times quoting attorney Norm Eisen, who serves as counsel for the House Judiciary Committee in Trump's first impeachment, as saying, quote, whatever is found there, meaning, the, you know, at Trump's home, as long as agents comply with the warrant, could be used in other cases. Your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. And here there's also another doctrine called the plain view doctrine. And what that stands for is that when officers or agents or detectives are lawfully in a place, and they were lawfully at Mar-a-Lago executing a judicially approved search warrant, if they see any other evidence of any other crime, they don't have to stop and get a new search warrant. They are lawfully entitled under the plain view doctrine to seize it and to use it to further its investigation, to move toward an indictment, and they can use it in a prosecution, which is why I think the Scott Perry search warrant for his cell phone is really interesting, given the timing that yesterday a warrant was executed at Mar-a-Lago, and today the federal authorities went after and secured a search warrant for Scott Perry's phone. It leads to a reasonable inference that they may have learned something in their search of Mar-a-Lago that gave them probable cause to then seize Scott Perry's phone, though we don't know that for sure.
Ajay, we've got about a minute, but before I let you go, I do have to ask this. You were an FBI special agent. What do you make of this charge from Trump's lawyers that the FBI may be fabricating evidence?
You know, I don't even understand this because the evidence is the presence of unauthorized classified information at Mar-a-Lago. I don't think that that's in dispute. If you possess classified information and you are not authorized to possess it or you are storing it insecurely, that can be a crime. So I'm not sure exactly what they would fabricate, because it sounds like when DOJ officials came to Mar-a-Lago in June, his lawyers actually showed them all the classified documents that were hanging around there. And in fact, had to put a padlock on it because they weren't secure. So I don't know exactly what is being suggested that is being fabricated. I think here it's a distraction because it's very hard to defend the underlying conduct, especially given that this is the same conduct which many of these people wanted Hillary Clinton to be locked up for just 4 years ago.
Right. Distractions are all they have left. Glenn Kirshner, Ajay Rangappa, thank you both so much. Still to come, after the FBI searches Donald Trump's home, Trump's far-right supporters, they are not handling it well. The wildest Republican reactions next.
On the MSNBC podcast, How to Win 2024, political experts, former Senator Claire McCaskill and Democratic strategist Jennifer Palmieri examine the campaign strategies unfolding in this all-important election.
The focus is on the voters that are not necessarily in your corner now.
If Democrats are going to win in 2024, we have to be able to explain what is happening at the border and what the solutions are.
Search for How to Win 2024 wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes every Thursday.
Hey, everyone, it's Chris Hayes. This week on my podcast, Why Is This Happening? We're back with another installment of our special series with Pod 2024, The Stakes. I'm talking to experts about both Joe Biden and Donald Trump's records on specific policy areas during their time as president. This week, economist Kim Clausing on taxes.
Underfunding the IRS really serves the interest of dishonest people at the top rather than your typical worker who would benefit from being able to get their questions answered and getting their returns processed in a quick way.
That's this week on Why Is This Happening? Search for Why Is This Happening wherever you're listening right now and follow.
Almost immediately after we learned about the FBI search of Donald Trump's home in Mar-a-Lago, the right-wing backlash began. Just minutes after the former president confirmed the search was taking place, Republicans on the House Judiciary Committee, led by Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio, fired off an impassioned tweet. Quote, "This is what happens in third world countries, not the United States. Doesn't the FBI have better things to do than harass the former president?" Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia posted this rallying cry that reverberated around far-right Twitter, quote, "Defund the FBI." House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy even issued a direct threat to Attorney General Merrick Garland and the DOJ, quote, "I've seen enough. The Department of Justice has reached an intolerable state of weaponized politicization. When Republicans take back the House, we will conduct immediate oversight of this department, follow the facts, and leave no stone unturned. Attorney General Garland, preserve your documents and clear your calendar." And on Fox News, the pro-Trump propaganda machine, well, it kicked into full gear.
A dark day for our republic, the Department of Justice, the rule of law.
This is the worst attack on this republic in modern history.
They say banana republic. I think it's an understatement because it really feels like we are there.
This is some third world bullshit right here.
I think there's going to be some more action you're going to see out on the streets from the base after they see this.
When we get power back, it's time to hold everyone accountable.
Trump supporters went even further online, making dangerous comments, many of them even suggesting that it is time for a civil war. And violent rhetoric appeared all over far-right message boards, like on the Donald, where the top comment was, quote, "lock and load." Joining me now is NBC News Justice reporter Ryan Riley and former RNC chairman Michael Steele. Ryan, what do we know about this dangerous right-wing chatter? I mean, where is it coming from? Who is leading it? How widespread is it really?
Yeah, it's pretty widespread. And what was especially interesting about that particular post on the Donald website, as my colleague Ben Collins and I reported, is that one of the top comments there that mentions a cold civil war is actually from a current January 6th defendant who is awaiting sentencing. You got to really feel bad for his lawyer here almost, because he made this comment a few months away from sentencing, which is coming up in November, and it's really not going to help his case. It's not the type of thing that you want to put out there when you're trying to convince a judge that you're not a future threat, that this was a one-off, that there's no threat from you in the future. That's not what you want to put out there. Not only that, he also clarified that he was being careful with his rhetoric because he was a January 6th defendant. So he also makes clear in these public comments that, oh, I was withholding. I wasn't saying how I really feel because I'm just worried about this this future sentencing, even though making the comments that he did in the first place wasn't the brightest move necessarily for his case. But I mean, it is a real issue that I think is, in addition to everything else they're doing, that the FBI has to look at. Remember, the FBI is like only like, you know, maybe a third of the way through all of the criminal cases they can bring against defendants going forward. There were more than 2,500 people who went inside the Capitol. There are more than 350 people who assaulted officers who still haven't been arrested. So this is just a massive investigation. Throw on top of that the Trump search, as we saw. Throw on top of that all of these threats. So there's going to be some stuff that slips through the cracks, frankly. It's like there's no way that they can handle all of that that's incoming at the same time. So if something happens in the future, I think that that's something that we just have to really be aware of. They're just really stretched.
Hey, Michael, that's the online chatter, but then you also have elected Republicans going after DOJ, basically cutting and pasting their favorite lines from Trump's statement into their own Twitter feeds. My question is, are they as loyal as their public statements would lead us to believe?
Where else are they going to go? When have they shown a loyalty to anything other than Donald Trump? Not to the party itself, not to the country, not to its own members of the caucus. I give you Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger. So that loyalty is only, it's a one-way street. Kevin McCarthy will find that out soon enough. And the reality of it is there is a price to be paid for that. And that price is what we see right now. The absence of leadership, Alicia, is damning. Liz Cheney, you know, hearkened to that point at the beginning of the January 6th committee, where the stain of all of this will linger beyond Trump. In fact, this is less and less about Trump now because the infection has so fully in moved inside the bloodstream of the party. Trump is not the animating character any longer.
Go ahead, Michael.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, just to the point, assume they're all, that it's all dangerous, that they're all dangerous until proven otherwise. Because what else do you have to go on?
That's why I thought it was particularly interesting that you had DeSantis getting on board this train, right? That the person who is seen as the most likely 2024 contender, whether Trump runs or not, felt that he had to come to Trump's defense on this, Michael.
Yeah, because he had nowhere else to go. The last thing he needs is all those Florida Republicans yipping at his ankles over Donald Trump. And so he placates, and this goes again to the base problem. They placate instead of being the leaders and saying, no, this is not what we do here. We are a party about the rule of law. You know, so right now it's just all a lie. It's a hypocrisy. But they will play to that point. Because they don't want to be on the wrong side of Trump. It is going to be a study in culture and political science for quite some time to come to understand exactly what it is this man has on these people to make them act so damn stupid.
Well, perhaps to that point, Ryan, I wonder what you have heard from your sources about this breaking news about Congressman Scott Perry's cell phone being seized by the FBI today.
I mean, it's significant, and you got to remember the role that he played, in terms of this back channel to try to put in these fake electors and the people that he put him into touch with. So he is kind of at the center of this investigation. But just real quickly, broadly on the broader FBI point, I do feel like, you know, there's that line in Zoolander from Will Ferrell, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. And whenever we have this portrayal of the FBI as some sort of liberal bastion, that's the only thing I can sort of think of, because the FBI is a conservative leaning law enforcement organization. And we've sort of like lost the thread on that in the past 6 years. It's like, who goes into the FBI? It's like, just like flash back to this idea of like, okay, go back to 2015. Are we calling the FBI this like bed of liberals then? No, it's just, outlandish. And I think that we've really lost it from where the facts actually lie. It's a law enforcement organization. Not only that, it's an overwhelmingly white and largely male organization. Just demographics alone sort of give you the indicators, in addition to all of the factors about the backgrounds of people who typically go into the FBI. It's a conservative-leaning organization, full stop. That's what we should sort of remember about this. So these attacks on the FBI are just very sort of out there and outlandish.
Ryan Riley, Michael Steele, thank you both so much. Still to come, the FBI does its job and the right calls for a civil war. Congressman Eric Swalwell on that, and what he thinks about one of his colleagues having his cell phone seized by the FBI. That's next.
Stay up to date on the biggest issues of the day with the MSNBC Daily Newsletter. Each morning, you'll get analysis by experts you trust, video highlights from your favorite shows.
2024 is now truly the most important election in the history of our country.
Previews of our podcasts and documentaries, plus written perspectives from the newsmakers themselves, all sent directly to your inbox each morning. Get the best of MSNBC all in one place. Sign up for MSNBC Daily at MSNBC.com.
Hey everyone, it's MSNBC's Chris Hayes. For the first time since 1892, we have an election in which both candidates have presidential records. It's a chance to take a hard look at what Joe Biden and Donald Trump have actually done as president. On a special Why Is This Happening podcast series called With Pod 2024 The Stakes, I'm talking to experts about the two candidates' records on specific policy areas like immigration, taxes, climate, and more. So you know what's at stake come November. Search for Why Is This Happening and follow.
In the 24 hours since the FBI arrived at Mar-a-Lago, we have seen an angry, sometimes even violent reaction from the right. An ex-guest member of Congress and former impeachment manager has taken the time to respond to some of his colleagues, like House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who threatened Attorney General Merrick Garland in a statement last night. Congressman Eric Swalwell of California called out McCarthy on Twitter, quote, says current member refusing to cooperate with the January 6th committee investigation. And Democratic Congressman Eric Swalwell of California joins me now. Congressman, what do you think largely about the right-wing reaction as a whole to the FBI search of Mar-a-Lago?
Good evening, Alicia. It's very clear that Republicans have recognized that they can no longer win elections with votes, and so they're leaning in hard to try and win elections with violence. And they're fomenting that violence right now with the threats they're making against the attorney general, with the online chatter that you continue to see, with the failure to even condemn it on their side. And I see it in my own social media channels where the threats have escalated since Donald Trump's residence was searched. And this is who they are now. They are a chaos party. Chaos is arming to the teeth most Americans with AR-15s and letting our children live in fear. Chaos is January 6th. Chaos is government-mandated pregnancies. Chaos is forcing Americans to spend $14,000 a year on insulin to just own the libs. And chaos is the leaders of the party arguing that we need to defund the FBI. They don't want community. They want chaos. And that's what the fallout's going to be from this search.
I have to ask you, as a former manager for Donald Trump's second impeachment, how vulnerable do you think he is here?
Incredibly vulnerable, because this was a Donald Trump appointed FBI director, an independent judge that looked at the evidence. And by the way, Alicia, this crowd for years said lock her up with respect to Hillary Clinton for what they thought were the mishandling of classified information. They wanted her to go to prison. All that happened here, if we're talking about classified information, is it looked like it was just taken out of his residence. Who knows what's going to happen in the future? But if that's the worst thing that happens to Donald Trump, it seems like they're getting all worked up for a lot of things. But what's really concerning, and I think sad when you take a beat and step back, is that when we saw that Donald Trump's residence was searched, no one said, oh my God, that's the last thing I ever thought would happen. Instead, most Americans speculated over which crimes the president's resident was being searched for, which just kind of level sets you for what he has brought to America. And what we're seeing now with this search and the crescendo of accountability and justice is finally the rule of law seems to be prevailing. And the rule of cronyism, which we saw under Donald Trump, is in the rearview mirror.
Speaking of, Congressman, your reaction to the news tonight that the FBI has seized a cell phone belonging to your colleague, Republican Congressman Scott Perry.
It looks like this may have been the result of the work that the January 6th committee, you know, a bipartisan committee that has been informed by almost entirely Republican witnesses, is doing. And Perry, from the evidence that we've seen, you know, was part of an effort that Donald Trump was also a part of to try and overturn a election back in 2020, and that they were plotting a coup, that there was a plan to send fake electors to try and, you know, trick, you know, a state legislatures, or to even have the Congress send back, you know, the certified electors so that the states could resend new electors. And so, you know, again, I trust this attorney general. I trust Donald Trump's appointed FBI director. They know that Scott Perry and Donald Trump should be treated no worse than any other criminal defendant, but certainly no better. But this new take that we've seen from Elise Stefanik and Donald Trump and even Scott Perry in his statement today, how could they possibly have searched a member of Congress's phone, or how could they have, you know, gone to a former president's home? Or if they could do this to a former president, they could do this to anyone. They're kind of missing the point that they should do this to anyone if they have broken the law and there's probable cause. You're not above the law. You're not an elite. You're not untouchable. And so it's nice to see that the rule of law has returned.
Not only are they missing the point, you have the RNC actively trying to fundraise off of what happened yesterday. I do have to ask you sort of to this cornucopia of potential crimes. Today, a federal appeals court ruled that the House could get access to Donald Trump's tax returns. I understand there's going to be some legal back and forth there, but more broadly, your reaction to that decision?
Well, first and foremost, a consciousness of guilt from Donald Trump that he wouldn't turn them over, right? Why would he, after every president before him would turn him over, wouldn't do so? But again, this shows that Congress, the first branch of government, Article 1, is able to assert its subpoena power, and that subpoena power must mean something. So justice is coming, you know, for the corrupt. And I am confident that when all is said and done, that the rule of law is going to prevail and that community is going to trump over chaos, which is where this MAGA Republican Party wants to take the country.
Congressman Eric Swalwell, as always, thank you so much. Coming up, as the DOJ closes in on Donald Trump, the January 6th committee plows forward with its own investigation. The Trump cabinet official who testified today, that's next. Today, 24 hours after the FBI executed a search warrant at the Florida home of the ex-president, the FBI agents seized the cell phone of Republican Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, who aided Trump in his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Congressman Perry is the guy who introduced Trump to Jeffrey Clark, the DOJ official who drafted letters to advance the coup and tried to replace his own boss, the acting attorney general. Meanwhile, even though the January 6th committee has no hearings scheduled until September, that's a few weeks out, they heard from two witnesses today, Trump's Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, and Pennsylvania Republican gubernatorial candidate, Doug Mastriano. While we do not yet have any details on the Pompeo interview, NBC News learned that Mastriano, who was subpoenaed to testify, ended his interview after just 15 minutes, refusing to answer any questions. The DOJ has also called several high-ranking Trump administration officials to testify. Last week, Trump White House counsel Pat Cipollone and his deputy, Patrick Philbin, were both subpoenaed to appear before a DOJ grand jury. In July, both Mark Short, Mike Pence's chief of staff, and Greg Jacob, Pence's legal counsel, also testified before a grand jury. Then there is former aide to Trump chief of staff Mark Meadows, Cassidy Hutchinson, who's cooperating with the DOJ as well. In Fulton County, Georgia, Rudy Giuliani, Trump's personal lawyer, was ordered to appear before a grand jury investigating election interference next week, though now he is trying to delay his testimony for health reasons. And we already knew that Trump's current legal team is in talks with the DOJ. But then last night, we got the enormous news of the FBI search of Mar-a-Lago, which, of course, puts the investigation in a whole new light. I'm going to discuss the ramifications of that search, what Congress can possibly do to disqualify Trump from ever running for office again. Next. In many ways, it feels like the walls are closing in on Donald Trump. From the January 6th committee's investigation, which continues to interview high-profile witnesses and obtain documents, to today's unanimous ruling by a federal appeals court, the House Ways and Means Committee can obtain Trump's tax returns from the IRS. To this latest action by the Department of Justice, who just executed a search warrant on Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence. Rick Hassan is a professor at the University of California, Los Angeles School of Law. He's the director of UCLA's Safeguarding Democracy Project and the founder of Election Law Blog, where he recently wrote about the chances of Trump being disqualified from running in 2024 if he illegally kept classified documents. Rick, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Can you explain to us this federal statute that Trump could have violated here if he withheld classified documents? There has been a lot of buzz about this idea that could prevent him from a second presidential bid. I know that you have thrown some cold water on that.
Sure. And I'm not the only one who's thrown cold water. So there's a federal statute. It's 18 U.S.C. 2071. And it basically says if you do certain things to classify documents, like conceal them or destroy them, you could face a fine or up to 3 years in jail. And then there's another part that says you're disqualified from running for federal office or serving in federal office. And so some have pointed to that and said, well, wouldn't that disqualify Trump for running for president? But the problem is the qualifications for running for president appear in the United States Constitution. You have to be 35 years old, born in the United States, and you can't really, according to the Supreme Court, add to those qualifications. So even if Trump were convicted of this crime, he wouldn't legally be barred from running for president or serving as president again.
Isn't there also, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong because you're a law professor and I'm just someone who took the LSAT and decided not to go to law school, that even before you even get there, you would have to have a Republican who was running against him, who wanted to challenge whether or not he was eligible to run, right? So first there would have to be that piece. And it seems like we're living in a moment where even that seems questionable.
Well, you know, someone could be a Republican and they could decide to, Liz Cheney could decide to run for president and raise a challenge. So if there's a standing issue, I think that standing issue could be solved. But there is a path to getting Donald Trump disqualified from running for president. And it doesn't relate to him allegedly taking classified documents, but instead for fomenting insurrection. Part of the 14th Amendment, Section 3, says you could be disqualified from serving as president if you participated in insurrection. It wouldn't be easy, but Congress could pass a statute now. It could lead to a court determination that Trump is ineligible to serve as president. And so there's a path, but it doesn't run through Mar-a-Lago.
According to the Washington Post, quote, on Tuesday, a lawyer for Trump said the agents who brought the court-approved warrant to Mar-a-Lago a day earlier took about 12 more boxes after conducting their search. I wonder if the volume, just the sheer volume of these documents surprises you, particularly after Trump handed over what we know was 15 boxes earlier this year.
Well, it makes me wonder what's in those boxes if he knew that he was in potential legal jeopardy and decided it was worth holding on to them. And so it's worth making this point that even if taking classified documents and potentially being convicted for doing that wouldn't be a legal impediment to running for president, it could certainly be a political impediment. And while Trump has the support of his base, running as a convicted felon would not be, the path that most people would choose if they wanted to run for president.
Pennsylvania Republican Congressman Scott Perry's phone was seized today by the FBI. Your sense of the significance of that?
So that seems much more related to the January 6th events. Perry allegedly was one of the people working in Congress, working closest with Trump on this scheme to try to subvert the 2020 election, to try to find these fake electors or have the vice president stop the counting of Electoral College votes. And so it's hard to see why they would be seizing his phone unless they were looking very closely at Trump and those around him to see if potential crimes like obstructing the official proceeding of counting Electoral College votes were not on the table by DOJ. The fact that they're doing these high-profile things all together shows that DOJ is focused on this. They know they're going to face political heat. This is, I think, a major escalation of what DOJ is planning on doing.
Do you think these latest developments, the Mar-a-Lago search warrant, high-profile Trump administration's officials going before the DOJ, do you think it all makes it more likely that Trump loyalists will testify that there's some type of momentum shift that is happening in this moment?
Well, you know, what you see right now is a circling of the wagons on the Trump side. I think people recognize that Merrick Garland probably has a lot more willingness to go forward on this. And so I think you're going to see a hardening of positions on both sides. But the legal process is going to take the path that it takes. And probably after the midterms, we'll have a good sense of whether or not there are going to be criminal charges filed against Donald Trump.
I recognize I'm about to ask you a question that is pretty impossible to answer, but given that this is your area of interest, I do wonder what you think the past 48 hours means for American democracy.
Well, to me, it's a somewhat of a hopeful sign, because one of the things that I've worried about is that Donald Trump tried to steal an election in 2020, and he so far, not only has he not paid consequences, he's still the kingmaker among Republicans when it comes to the primaries, and he could run again. So I think anything that would hold him accountable for potential violations of the law is a step forward in terms of protecting American democracy.
I do want to ask you quickly, there's the legal piece of this. There's also just the political ether piece of this. If he is, in fact, charged with crime, do you think it makes it harder for him to run and for people to continue to support him?
Well, there are diehard Trump supporters who will, what did he say? That someone, he could be shooting someone on Fifth Avenue and people would follow him, but that's not everybody. I think it would be a much harder path for him should he face an actual indictment or even conviction.
Someone said yesterday only 24 people showing up outside of his residence to protest, more of a get-together than a rally. Rick Hassan, as always, thank you so much. That is it for All In on this Tuesday night.
Hi, everyone. It's Katie Fang. Did you know my weekly show on MSNBC is now available as a podcast? With my decades of experience as a trial lawyer, you'll get an insider's perspective on all things legal. At a time when politics and the law are inextricably intertwined, my guests and I break down what's next and why it matters, both inside and outside the courtroom. Search for The Katie Fang Show wherever you're listening and follow.